Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
It's half right. Chris Lewis is here. Bob Beeler is not.
You're telling me I'm not a voice of the Broncos?
And Michael Fisher is still here, and he's on the other side of the glass. Yeah, but you weren't in that little montage there.
I can't like to believe I'm a voice of the Broncos.
Okay, we'll hear from a voice of the Broncos and Bob Beeler later on in the show. We'll hear his voice because Touchdown for Tickets continues. And since he is the voice of the Broncos and does play-by-play for football, Touchdown for Tickets, a chance for you to qualify to win season tickets for Boise State football within the next half hour. So we'll do it again where you have to guess whether the call was a TD or not, the call from Bob. And again, within the next 30 minutes, there will be another chance for you guys to qualify.
Which, shout out to our listeners, 2 for 2 yesterday, the only two in the drawing, and they won finally.
Yeah, I know. We were getting robbed.
Though,
if you
watch the video on Facebook Live,
okay,
they put in the two names into the Chicago Bears Cup that apparently JP has used for, you know, storing skull and other items. And three names came out.
Wait a minute, but there are only two qualifiers.
Yeah, so I think there's some little fishy business, no pun intended, about preventing our winners or our qualifiers from winning, but they finally pulled through yesterday, snuck past JP and his trickery. So
there we go. Make sure we got it done.
Yeah,
we got
finally.
So hopefully we can get another one from the 1 to 3 o'clock segments of Idaho Sports Talk. NBA didn't have a game yesterday, so kind of felt lonely. You know me, my routine is to watch the NBA playoffs every night. There wasn't any game. So.
How long though, with these playoffs? Are you watching for two quarters?
I'm typically trying to get to at least three because we can have a comeback in some of these. But like even the Celtics-Cavs won the most recent. Like the Celtics aren't coming back in this game, but that game too is tonight. But also, Boston had a pretty good week, even though they got crushed in game one of the series because the Celtics still got the number one pick in the draft. But the NBA lottery, which was a couple of days ago, the results, it proved why the draft isn't exactly needed. And it's something that I've been harping on quite a bit on this show. But look at the lottery results from yesterday, or from a couple of days ago. Yeah, the Boston Celtics at number one, Los Angeles Lakers at number two, and the Philly 76ers at number three. Although I wish it was higher for the Sixers. But the reason that I hear for a lot of you guys who are so stringent on having the draft is that it's a way for the small markets to compete with the big markets. So let me go down the list of those teams one more time. You have Boston, which is the 11th ranked market in the country. However, that was the pick that belongs to the Nets, Brooklyn, the New York market, which is the number one markets in the NBA. And by Boston, I mean 11th ranked market in the NBA. I'm going to go all these by rankings in the NBA. Los Angeles Lakers, they're the number two pick. Of course, they have the advantages of being in LA, but big city, they're the third/fourth because they have two teams in the market. But yes, the third and fourth ranked, with New York having one and two with the Knicks and the Nets. And then the Sixers of Philly, number three pick, the seventh largest market. So I thought if we're supposed to have the draft as a way for the small markets to compete with the big markets, then what in the world are the big markets doing constantly at the bottom of the lottery? Is that the first time that these teams are there? The Lakers have had the number two pick for like the last three years. The Sixers have had a top four pick like the last 4 years. The Celtics have had a top pick each of the last couple of years. Jaylen Brown last year, not the top pick, but a top five pick. But that belongs to Brooklyn, who has been in this position at the seller of the NBA, again, in a large market. So you cannot sell me the fact that this is a way, the draft in the current way that it's situated, it's a way where the smaller markets are competing with the larger markets. To me, it's just incentivizing losing, and the larger markets are taking advantage of the fact that the draft incentivizes losing. So if you enter with the mentality of the system that is the draft fair, and what could you do? You could actually have a different system in place that isn't related to record at all. There's a couple of ways you can go about it. Now, Kevin Arnovitz, in an article on ESPN.com, this was a few years ago, but he brought up the example of med school graduates who have national match, a system that governs the process, which includes an extensive application, which takes into account a medical student's standardized test performance, interviews by invitation, Once those face-to-face meetings are over, hospitals list their candidates in order of preference, while the future residents do the same for hospitals. And those rankings are fed into a computer where the algorithm processes them and figures out where there's mutual interest. So instead of just having...
Remember what happened last time we had the computers, algorithms, and sports in one place?
It'd
be the BCS. Just a few issues there, Chris Lewis. Besides, what's stopping every single NBA team from listing Markelle Fultz as their number one guy?
That's exactly what would likely happen. Because let's use this standardized test performance. He would be number one in the standardized test performance. A standardized test being
so then how does the algorithm determine? So then
does
Markelle Fultz get a list out his?
So then Markelle Fultz has a list of what he wants as the top teams that he would want to go to. And most likely, it would match with the number one on the list of whatever team that wants Markelle Fultz. And boom, that's the team that he
ends
up going
to. So what happens if
to.
Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and Josh Jackson all put the L.A. Lakers as their number one fit?
Well, then the Los Angeles Lakers would have the pick because they have to list one of those prospects as
number
one.
So what if they go Ball, Fultz, Jackson?
So then they get Lonzo Ball if they all had him number one on the list.
But then how does the computer determine who's number second if... Is it to go to Markelle Fultz's number two?
Yeah, you go down the list and try to match it closely to okay. He had
what if he only put what if
he
what if he pulls
hire.
All right? What if Lonzo Ball pulls a Lonzo Ball and only lists the Lakers and say the Lakers list him as their number two pick?
Then
what happens?
He's not on a team. He's not. In
he,
the NBA
he just doesn't
next
go
year.
To a team.
He's not in the NBA next year. It doesn't
that
work
seems
that
like
way.
A terrible system.
That's one of the ways to do this. Yeah, but you have to make somebody list more than one team. Rank them 1 to 32. It's a ranking system. Rank
well,
one
I
to
mean,
30.
Most
There's
prospects work out for more than one team until this year.
Yeah, so rank them 1 to 30. You have to do it, and that's the way. And then instead of having a draft, you could have National Match Day, if you will, and instead of revealing with the first pick the Celtics select, you could just reveal. Go, the Celtics, they were assigned.
So how do we reveal?
You can use envelopes.
Well,
you
I mean,
have
what order do we go in? What order are we going? We go in from worst record to best record, alphabetical, random.
Alphabetical seems fun.
And does each team get two players?
No, each team gets one.
So then you've just cut down the number of NBA rookies from 60 plus to 30.
Well, okay, if you have a pool of 60 people, then you can each have two.
There's a pool of, like, what, 100 players that declare for the draft?
Mm-hmm.
So are we going 60? Can I trade these rights?
You can make. We can work out the details.
Okay,
I mean,
we got.
You
can
go at least with one. Each team could get one.
Okay,
assigned.
Each team gets one
but
guy.
There's other way you could do it is free agency, which is actually might be a more intriguing way to do this. But you have to enter it with a mentality that the current system of the draft is unfair to the people who are coming into whatever league it is, the NBA or the NFL, the two most popular drafts that we have, because no other field in really the country are you assigned your workplace. Usually you have a labor market where the talented people and the prestigious institutions generally get to pick where they would want to go. So let's say if you're a once-in-a-lifetime engineering student who wants to negotiate a position and a salary from the top firms in the Silicon Valley, instead, you have to be assigned to the worst one, and actually, they're the ones picking you. You were assigned there because you were the least competent amongst the Silicon Valley firms instead of the most competent amongst the
Silicon Valley
firms. Yeah, but people would want to rather work at Google than a company in Silicon Valley that isn't doing as successful. And
true, but what you have to also consider, if you go with this, you're going to have some kind of format where the worst teams have a bigger bonus, right? Or are you just saying every team, for say, gets $1 million?
No, you don't have to have a system where the worst teams do anything, because right now we have a system where the worst teams are rewarded for it. And then you have a comment like Mark Cuban says earlier this week where, yeah, we're trying to lose at the end of the season. Why do you have to have a system in place that rewards losing? Why don't you have a system in place that rewards culture, rewards unique opportunities?
So then you'll be stuck like we are now, and we would see the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers for the next seven
but
finals.
Let me ask you. If you're Markelle Fultz, why would you want to sign up to the Warriors? You're not going to play.
You get a championship.
You're not going to play at all. Like, that's the whole thing. There's a salary cap, quote-unquote, in basketball, or a thing that automatically institutes parity, and it's the fact that there's five players who play and there's one Ball.
Yeah,
so if you think that, like, a talented wing would want to sign up for those Miami Heat teams that had LeBron and had Dwayne Wade playing the wing positions – There's no way the most talented wing player in a draft class would want to sign up for that because there's no minutes for them.
Well,
they would
it depends
have no
on
way
their priorities.
Play. Yeah.
Well, we could see reverse
and
ring
again,
chasers.
If their priority is to win at all cost and not even really contribute to the winning itself, then why? Who are we to kind of dissuade that? Because, for most people who are making millions of dollars per year, most people who are making $1 million per year have a chance to choose where they're going to make millions of dollars per year. True. So if they want to incentivize just winning, even though you're not contributing to it, because you're not going to crack the lineup of the Heat when they had LeBron and they had Dwayne Wade, you're not going to crack the Warriors lineup that has Chris Paul or has Steph Curry and has Klay Thompson and has Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. Where are you going to play if you're a wing player or a guard? You're not. But if you just rather sit on the bench and collect,
you can replace Andre Iguodala.
But there's the other thing: you still have a salary cap in place in the NBA. The Warriors can't even pay you that much.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to make chump change while not playing just to get a ring. I don't think that would Markel Fultz
who's,
is
who's
going to
stop the Warriors from cutting Andre Iguodala and say, all right, we can bring in Markel Fultz.
Guaranteed contracts. It's the NBA. You can't just cut people like you can in the NFL. There's guaranteed contracts.
Yeah,
Andre Iguodala is an interesting example because he is a free agent, so they don't have to resign.
Exactly. And you'll have teams right now, they plan, okay, there's a big free agent class coming up in 2 years. We're going to make it so all our contracts expire in 2019. We'll have the big sweepstakes. Teams can do that.
Yeah, well, teams are right now intentionally losing and doing the same thing. They're signing guys to one-year deals so they don't have any long-term contracts on their books and having rosters that are really set up to lose so they can take advantage of this. So would you rather have guys or teams incentivized to win and actually compete on the court, or would you rather have a third of the league like you have right now set your roster up to lose so you can get these guys? Your league is not healthy when you have a system set up to
lose. But is your league healthy the other way, where you're going to have maybe three or four teams competing for a championship and everyone else is just there to kind of get beat down?
What I'm saying is right now we have a draft. Right now we have a system where there's, how many teams you think can win a championship? How many blowouts you need to have in this round of the playoffs? So
you think the
I don't know if this current system right now is even
Yeah, but the blowouts aren't
going to
get any better if you say, all right, Markel Fultz, you're going to Cleveland because you want to win there. And, hey, they need another wing scorer. They need another guard in Cleveland.
I don't think they need another wing scorer.
You think Cleveland would turn down Markel Fultz as their second guard?
I don't think they'd have enough money to invest in Markel Fultz to match what he wants.
That's the problem, though, is the luxury tax. They'll say, oh, we'll pay, you know.
You can't pay over the salary cap for guys who aren't on your roster. You can't, let's say they wanted to re-sign Kyrie Irving. They could go over the salary cap for that and pay the luxury tax. To sign somebody who's not on your team, you can't go over the salary cap.
Does LeBron have an opt-out option? Hey, LeBron, opt out. We're going to sign Markel Fultz. You come back, we'll pay the luxury tax on your deal.
I just don't think that's what he would want, to be a fourth option on a team that
I think he could pass Kevin
maybe
Love
would
quickly.
Win. He's a fourth option. He's a guard. He's not even a starter. And he's making
who's gonna start
less
over
money
him?
Than he would on about half of the
NBA. Who's
going to
start over him, Chris Lewis?
I don't think you're looking at this from a realistic standpoint. Get the best sports radio, The Ticket, with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. Special social media posts, live broadcasts, featured interviews, conversations, entire shows. It's an Idaho sports lover's dream. Download the Sports Radio, The Ticket app today. Why does baseball seem to have the best storytellers? We go into that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. We're at a spot in the calendar where the baseball season reaching its, quarter pole. We're almost a week from Memorial Day. And new book out, The Voices of Baseball, Game's Greatest Broadcasters Reflect on America's Pastime, with a lot of interesting nuggets in it. Kirk McKnight is the author of that book, and he's joining us now here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Kirk, thanks for joining. Now, why did you write this book? Did you listen to baseball all your life?
I have. I've been a baseball fan all my life, and I've always been a fan of the ballparks and the stadiums themselves. So I guess what I was trying to do was to write about the stadiums and ballparks to kind of pay homage to them and their differences and their peculiarities. And so branching off of that idea, I thought, well, why would I be the person to hear the perspective from? Why not use somebody who knows about the ballparks? So I thought immediately of the broadcasters and their tenure in broadcasting, and they outlast the players and the managers. They sometimes outlast the owners themselves. So you get guys who have that much experience. That's the kind of perspective you want, because there's a lot of history, there's a lot of memories, and you can just tap into that. It just spills down to a lot of great material for each chapter.
What is it about the baseball broadcaster that seems to yield more credibility than a lot of other sports? I mean, the baseball broadcaster seems to connect in a certain way.
You know, the thing about baseball is a very slow-moving sport, you know, and if you're tuned in on the radio, you have to be kept in there. You have to be grasped onto to keep into that. If you love baseball and you just love the whole sport and America's pastime, everything like that, that's great. But there also needs to be something for those 3 hours to keep you there. The broadcast, especially on the radio, paint that picture and put you in the stands and give you that atmosphere. I think baseball is one of those only sports out there that you really just have to kind of experience it in person, and have that feeling of going to a baseball game, and you remember it, and you remember it back to when you were a kid and all those things. And when you have a broadcaster sit there and kind of tell you it's a lovely day today out here at Fenway or just something like that and talk about the way the sun's going over the monster or things like that, you know, you basically imagine yourself being in that seat, in that stadium or in that ballpark. And that's the beautiful thing about broadcasting in baseball. They basically put you there with enough time on their broadcast to call balls and strikes, to call the action as it happens, and to basically guide you along a game that otherwise is pretty slow, but it becomes pretty informative and it becomes pretty interesting when you have a person like Vin Scully or John Miller kind of guide you through there for a few hours at a time.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis. Our guest is Kirk McKnight, author of The Voices of Baseball, The Game's Greatest Broadcasters Reflect on America's Pastime. Did you get into it all about how radio broadcasting has changed and has it changed? Did they talk about, so, you know, some of the guys you interviewed have broadcast for a lot of years. What's different? What's the same?
I think a lot of things that are different is the game itself. You talk to radio broadcasters, you see how things changed. If you're broadcasting in an era in the 80s and the 90s when the ball is just flying out of the yard and we come to find out in the 2000s because of juicing and everything like that, you're calling a different baseball game than you are calling them post-Balco and post, you know, Juiced, the book by Jose Canseco. Anybody could see that. You see how many no-hitters there are in baseball now and perfect games when those things, you would go one or two seasons without there being a no-hitter. And now sometimes there's up to four or five in one season alone. So the game itself has changed. The broadcasters have kind of honed their craft to the evolution of the game. We have, and obviously we have things like contracts. I mean, free agency was nothing anything that anybody had ever heard of. And then you have people like Catfish Hunter going from the A's to the Yankees and different things like that. And Reggie Jackson. So the game changes, and a lot of these guys that I've talked to have been around long enough to remember those days and broadcast during those days. The game changes, whether it be a huge change like in hockey where we don't see fights nearly as much as we used to, or just subtle changes, but these guys go through them, and they kind of adapt to them. They kind of have to hone their broadcast to the times they're changing.
What is one story in this book that you had no idea about that you thought, hey, this is a very cool, interesting nugget, or something that you've learned from doing the reporting for this book?
I think one of the most interesting things to think about is that a city like Atlanta, for the longest time in baseball, was the highest altitude of baseball, and you would not think of that. But you think about it, Atlanta is an inland kind of city. You think about, you know, all the cities on the coast that are at sea level, and you think, wow, Atlanta of all places? Because now we have Colorado and we have Arizona, and Arizona is the second highest altitude, and I think of Arizona as nowhere near the altitude as you know, I think you'd ever think of. So the geography and the science of baseball are things that I just didn't think anything of. So in Atlanta, with that higher altitude, it gives a little bit more of a lift to the baseball. Same thing as in Arizona when they have the stadium opened and the panels and the roof open. That open air and that altitude really lend to the ball flying, especially in the hotter months. And then you have the opposite effect in California, where you would think California's got to be the nicest place ever to watch a night game, when it's not. It's cold. It's got that marine layer from the ocean, and the ball will just die in the air. you'll see a lot of high or a lot of low ERAs, should I say, and a lot of high innings pitch for pitchers on the West Coast teams, because they get to pitch so deep into the innings because the ball is not leaving the park and the ball's staying in. So they get more outs, they get more production, and they get lower numbers when they're pitching at home.
Kirk McKnight joining us, the author of Voices of Baseball, the game's greatest broadcasters reflect on America's pastime. You've got a lot of new parks. It sounds like you spent a lot of time talking with the parks. Do they like the new parks more or less, or would they still like to have old places like Tiger Stadium and places like that that don't exist anymore?
I think they like the new parks, but I think another thing about it is that their perspective and their standpoint, where their booth is. A lot of times in these new ballparks, they put these broadcasters up at the top of the stadium, when at some place like you just mentioned, Tiger Stadium, they were right there. Basically, there were times when there was a time in Cleveland when the umpire called and threw a broadcaster out of the game because he could hear him. He was close enough that he could hear him and his scrutiny and you know, just the way he was talking to him. The broadcaster was thrown out of the game by the umpire. You don't have that in these new stadiums. Now, they love the effect of the ballpark and that it's not cookie cutter anymore. They love the fact that these ballparks, you can drop, you know, it used to be back in the day, you could take Three River Stadium, Riverfront Stadium, the Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, all these different stadiums, and they're the exact same dimensions and they look the exact same. You just have to see the colors of the shirts in the crowd. Now, every ballpark has its own identity, and it lends to a more exciting game. They try to accommodate these structures to the fans and their likes. Fans love triples, so a lot of these ballparks have the dimensions so that the ball kind of ping-pong around these outfields and all their different angles at the walls. And then also the fans love it when a outfielder will steal a catch or steal a home run. And a home run stealing catch is one of the more exciting moments in baseball as well. And a lot of these ballparks have those lower outfield walls to invite that kind of thing.
Now going back to the voices of baseball and the broadcasters themselves, do you think we've seen the last of the legendary local broadcasters? It seems like we've had the era of the legendary local broadcasters, but a lot of them, whether Vin Scully being a representation of the old era, of him being his first season without doing the Dodgers, have we seen the last of somebody like that?
I would hope not. But I do see what you're saying, and I do kind of feel that way sometimes. We just see new batches of broadcasters come in. It's a whole new crew on Sunday Night Baseball, and they do a good job. Not to take anything away from them, but I totally miss being able to watch John Miller on Sunday night for Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN. And how lucky is the San Francisco crowd that they get him every day of the year? And you know, broadcasters like that who have been around for a long time and who really can just paint, you know, who really just paint the picture and really just guide you through the game. I think you're kind of right on that. I think that's the way it's going. We get more former players who are now broadcasters. You know, they love the game. They love sticking around to it, but they have the knowledge of the game. But the broadcasting aspect, there's always the friend. There's the friendly aspect of a broadcaster. Somebody who says hello, and somebody who tells you good night when they sign off the broadcast. I think that kind of thing is kind of deteriorating and diminishing in broadcasting. We have lesser and lesser of the personalities like Lindsey Nelson and Bob Murphy and Red Barber and Mel Allen, the guys who you tuned into, like they were the kind of person that you probably just had lunch with that day. That's the way you feel because they're just so personable. And I think we are kind of going away from that.
Was there somebody that you especially enjoyed interviewing for this book?
I really enjoyed interviewing the ones that I listened to all my life, like Vin Scully. I really enjoyed interviewing Dick Enberg, talking with Dick Enberg in person and interviewing him in his actual booth down in San Diego. In fact, that was the only interview I did in a broadcaster's actual booth when they actually worked. Everything else was usually on the phone or in a hotel lobby. Talking to these guys, though, you just know everything they're saying is just sage advice or just wisdom. And so talking with them, it was just such a great experience. And I think talking with Vin Scully, John Miller, and Dick Enberg, and Marty Brandman, four of the seven Hall of Famers featured in the game, it seemed everything that they said I wanted to put to paper. No matter which way or which form I could do it, I just wanted to basically have it there because it just seemed to make so much more sense coming out of their mouths.
Kirk, thanks so much for your time. The book is The Voices of Baseball, The Game's Greatest Broadcasters Reflect on America's Pastime, available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Look forward to reading it.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
And right now, if you're the ninth caller, you can try and qualify to win a pair of Boise State football season tickets. Touchdown for tickets. Tickets are in Section 132, Row K. It's a $580 value in the south end zone, second deck. It's sponsored by the Bronco Athletic Association, and again, $580 value for the pair. So 424-9300 right now, ninth caller can play touchdown for tickets next. Touchdown for tickets time. Adam was the ninth caller, so Adam will get a chance to get it right and qualify for some Boise State football season tickets. How's it going, Adam?
Going good. How's it going?
All right, I'm doing pretty well here. Now, for you, how many games did you get a chance to get to last year?
I didn't get to any last year.
You didn't get to any. So you watched them all on TV?
Yeah, I watched most of them on TV.
All right, so let's see how you're able to do here. Okay, this is how it works. We'll play a call. It'll stop about midway through, and then you're going to have to tell me whether it was a touchdown or not. So, Michael Fisher, let's go with the play.
Got McNichols off his right shoulder. Puts Butler in motion. Spurback throwing the ball on the run. Wide open, A.J. Richardson.
A.J. Richardson was wide open, but what happened?
Touchdown.
He says touchdown.
Got McNichols off his right shoulder. Puts Butler in motion. Spurback throwing the ball on the run. Wide open, A.J. Richardson for the score. Thomas Spurback, now in his Bronco career, 7 of 12 throwing the football for 4 touchdowns.
Ding, ding. And that Bob just set it up perfectly at the end there. Like, when you hear Spurback is throwing the ball, there's probably the good chance that the guy's going to score a touchdown, and A.J. Richardson did just that. Adam, you remember that play?
I don't, but I'm glad I got it right.
There you go. So congratulations, Adam. You're one of the qualifiers. Listen at 5:30, Caves and Prater, to see if you win the season tickets. And, of course, if you didn't get a chance to qualify, be listening next hour for another chance to win. Again, this is touchdowns for tickets, and season tickets gives you the best pricing per game, the best seats, opportunities to purchase additional home games, road games, bowl games. Touchdowns for tickets on your FM home for Boise State football, Sports Radio 93.1, the tickets. So, Adam, we're now, what, 3 in a row?
Yeah, 3 for 3.
Let's
or 3
go.
In a row, yeah.
Hype for that. All right, so sports update time.
The sports update is sponsored by Big Judd's for the all-new deep-fried pickle spirit nacho burger at Big Judd's on protest near Boise State and in Meridian on Overland near Eagle Road. Well, Tampa Bay Buccaneers have added their backup quarterback after Mike Glennon went to the Bears. That would be Ryan Fitzpatrick. Former Jets quarterback signed a one-year deal worth $3 million. Patrick was benched twice last year, threw more interceptions than touchdowns. The Jets went 5-11. However, 2 years ago, he did set the Jets' franchise record in touchdowns, and if he attempts at least one pass for the Buccaneers in the regular season, he'll become the sixth quarterback in NFL history to attempt a pass for 7 different teams.
Wow. Now, the question is, can you name all 7?
No, it's not even close. I can name another one who could join the club. That would be his replacement in New York, Josh McCown.
Yeah, he's been in a lot.
All he has to do is attempt one pass with the Jets, and he will set the record, or tie the record. So,
Yeah, Texans, Bills...
Rams is where he started.
Rams. Yeah. Bucks before.
I think.
Yeah, Titans.
Jets. Did we already say the Jets?
Maybe.
Right, yeah, I don't know. That's 7 teams is a lot of teams. But hey, he's staying in business, not going into the broadcasting booth like Jay Cutler and Tony Romo, so that's a plus.
Right? Did you know he played at Harvard?
I did, of course. Everyone knows he plays at Harvard. The first non-punter kicker to play at Harvard and start in the NFL, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I wonder when it'll be the first game where that's not mentioned. Like, not in every game we mentioned Tom Brady played at Michigan. Like, that's not brought up every single game.
No, it's mentioned he's drafted in the 6th round a lot.
Yeah, but the Michigan thing, not every game. Ryan Fitzpatrick, every single game, yes, I know he played at Harvard. Yes, I know that doesn't mean he makes smart decisions. A lot of interceptions for a guy who's supposed to be smart.
Well, you know, maybe he has a lack of athletic talent. That's why he stayed around, is he's compensating for how smart he is, Chris Lewis.
By throwing picks.
Well, his arm's just not strong enough as his brain. You know, he sees, he's like, got the angle ooh, threw it a little too slow.
What do we say about quarterbacks that have a lot of picks? Bad decision maker. Not very smart. What do we say about Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Pretty smart, right?
Yep.
Well, Chris Lewis, have you ever had to do something you wanted to get out of it? Thought maybe a famous athlete could help you out? I know you're out of school now, so it's a test is out of the window. But
I would try to get Allen Iverson to get me out of a math test when I was like in third grade. That seemed like it would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Twitter didn't exist back then, did it?
No.
Well, Kobe Bryant, he started this trend yesterday. A high schooler named William Pete took to Twitter asking Kobe to help get him out of his final exam. Pete sent a tweet out with a picture of him and his teacher shaking hands, and Kobe retweeted the tweet the class would dodge the final exam. Kobe responded by saying, "Hope you have an A in the class," and retweeting the tweet. So they got out of that, but it did not end there, as Aaron Rodgers, same thing happened over in Iowa. Guy tweeted out, said, "Our teacher's a huge fan. If you retweet this, we'll get out of our final exam." And Aaron Rodgers said the same thing. You know, he said, "I'm sure this class is important, but hope this helps." I have one problem with the Aaron Rodgers story.
All right, what's the problem?
So this is in high school.
Okay.
Sports literature class is the final exam they are looking to dodge.
Wow, you got a sports literature class in high school.
What?
That is awesome.
I would have killed to have a sports literature class in high school over biology, math, English.
But it goes to show you, no matter how cool the class is, nobody wants to take the final. Now, the question that I'll throw back at you, would you rather have a final exam where you have to, like, multiple choice or fill out a bunch of questions, yeah, or whatever? Or would you rather have a final paper, a term paper?
Oh, easily the multiple choice one.
Yeah. I'd rather have, let me just take the 2 hours to take the test instead of having to dedicate however time it is
to write
the paper.
I
hate the term paper. Much rather, even if I didn't even prepare for the test, I'd rather just take the test and get my C and maybe.
Plus multiple choice, you can wing it. You can, you know, oh, hey, look at that.
Abacadabra.
Put A for every answer. You're supposed to get a fourth of them right. Now, Chris Lewis, I'll put a question to you. You can check us out on the KTIK Facebook page. Shaquille O'Neal at his local rec center somewhere decided to play pickup basketball. Some poor man decided he was going to play defense down on the block on Shaq. May have been an offensive foul. Wasn't called. Threw the man to the ground. Shaq dunks it. So my question to you, Chris Lewis, would you rather guard Shaq down low on the block or have to guard AI at the three-point line?
Ooh, this is a tough one. No, I saw that video, too, again, on the KTIK Facebook page. Yeah, the dude gets, like, bum-rushed by Shaq. But I think I'd still rather defend Shaq. Because if I'm defending Iverson on the perimeter, there's nothing more embarrassing on the basketball court than getting crossed over. Even getting bullied in the post is not as embarrassing as when you're playing
pickup.
Bully,
he threw that man to the ground.
That's the definition of bullying to me. He got wrecked down low.
Now, are you calling an offensive foul on that?
No, you don't call offensive. Call your own fouls, and don't call an offensive foul on Shaq. That's you can't get respect
that way. Asking for punishment.
Really, you can't take offensive fouls and call your own fouls and pick up. You don't call offensive fouls. Like that's
right.
Weak.
Right.
You don't take charges. Nobody takes charges and pick up ball.
I'm taking AI, and I'm just biting on the first move he does.
You won't wind up on YouTube if you bite on the first move.
Exactly, because if I go first and then he crosses me over, I go second, I may not be able to walk for the rest of the day, and I'll be on my butt. I'm just going for the first move, and I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, once it gets you on the string is where it's dangerous, because you try to commit, he got you leaning back.
Or I'm giving
forward.
Him a lot of space. AI, not a great three-point shooter, am I wrong?
Yeah, he's about, like, what, 30%?
Yeah, I'll just give him a lot of space and just dare him to shoot a three.
Yeah, I feel like you got to play him, though. Like, we're talking about you actually have to go up and play the
game. Okay, yeah, then I'm biting on the first move. I'm pulling a ball family, bite on the first move, boom, down the lane, cherry picking for the easy layup, and we're equal, right?
I just don't want to get on a string on Allen Iverson. Or Kyrie Irving's in the same kind of category when it comes to, like, dribble.
But there you go. Maybe if you still have a high school test going on, maybe tweet it. Kellen Moore, maybe? Hey, Kellen, get us out of this test.
Good work.
Yeah.
Listening to almost 100 years of Idaho sports broadcasting experience. Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and I. You got Kays and Prater. You got JP. Idaho Sports Talk, 32 years old with almost 100 years of experience. Listen, weekdays 1 to 6 on Sports Radio, The Ticket. And up next, it is quick hits, including, what are you rooting for? A couple of 12-0 teams or some longer series? That's next in quick hits on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Time for quick hits. It's Michael Fischer and I taking on these four topics. Rapid fire fashion is how it works. Let's do it.
Topic number one.
All right, why is LeVar Ball the best thing that happens to the NBA? Dude, who you just love.
Well, I would do say his latest comments, I'm not a big fan of about his clothing line towards women, but he's the best thing to happen to the NBA because he's going to make every single regular season game against the Lakers must-watch television when we're in an era where, oh man, this is a TNT Thursday night game, and none of the starters are playing. Especially because Olivia Simmons, the sister of Ben Simmons, your number one draft pick on your 76ers, last year said, I hope my brother Ben dunks on Lonzo Ball so hard next year that his daddy runs on the court to help him up. There's going to be a storyline in every game. You're not going to be on the team that sees Lonzo go for 30 for the first time, 40 for the first time, 15 assists, his first triple-double. Now, LeVar Ball said, okay, if I have to make people play against my son, they have a problem being in the league. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen, and it's going to be great TV for 82 games next year.
Yeah, because especially LeVar is going to say something wild. Now, my question is, will LeVar's attention in the regular season of the NBA next year be on the NBA, or will it be on his other son who'd be at UCLA?
Oh, it'll be on the NBA. Okay. This is the middle child in all sense of the words. He's the worst child at basketball, only a three-star recruit. No one's going to care about him, unfortunately.
Ooh, man. You're basically calling him an orphan.
I didn't say that, just said he's the middle child.
Topic number two.
Now, Chris, are you rooting for two 12-0 teams going into the finals or for the 5-6 game series?
It's funny because it has everything to do with my profession. My normal, like a normal basketball fan, Chris Lewis, would say 12-0 teams, go for it. Best story. You have an epic finals, never had two teams run through the playoffs in this way and then have them meet for a chance to decide a championship, the trilogy. But being a sports talk radio host this time of year, I need some games, man. I need some game fives. I need a game six. Need something. Need some in-depth storylines with these series. Because there's a chance that if these are both sweeps, there's like 8 days in between games of the end. Like the last game of a sweep would be a Tuesday, and the NBA Finals would start the next Thursday. Not that week, but the following week's Thursday. That's a lot of time to come up with topics without any NBA games. So, like, normally I would say, yeah, go for it. Two 12-0 teams. But having to discuss sports every day, how about some game fives and sixes?
No, I'm sorry. I disagree, Chris Lewis. You always root for history if you could be there to watch it.
Topic number three.
You trying to hook me up with tickets?
No, we're watching from afar.
Okay, watch it on TV. Why will LeVar Ball sell more shoes than Tom Brady will sell of whatever latest product he's trying to sell?
Well, he may sell more shoes than Tom Brady sold pajamas, but Tom Brady's latest product is he is now helping to market and endorse the Aston Martin, the exclusive car brand that sells about 4,000 cars a year, only 1,000 in the United States. But Tom Brady's helping to design the Vanquish S car, which, of course, only 12 cars will be sold. LeVar Ball claims he's already sold over 400 shoes, so he's already destroyed Tom Brady's latest product. Come on, Tom, learn from the best. If you're going to charge a lot of money, $212,000, at least make them a little more accessible. Only 12?
Tom Brady, he's been the guy throughout his career to market to the high-end watches, high-end
flip-flops. 12 at least, right? Oh, high-end flip-flops. I'm going big baller brand over Tom Brady.
Now, that's the thing. I think LeVar Ball is getting into his lane here. LeVar Ball wants to sell the high-end stuff, the big baller stuff. I think about LeVar Ball and trying to market baller. Man, since when is it back to 2002 where we're using baller as a term?
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of, like, Big Timers and the rapper Chingy in 2002. Like, what are we doing here? I thought we graduated beyond the term baller.
LeVar Ball's bringing us back.
Topic number four.
Now, Chris, what do you want the Sixers to do with their third overall pick in the NBA draft?
It is an interesting spot, right? Because if it's chalky, you have Markelle Fultz to the Celtics at one. Lonzo Ball to the Lakers at two, everybody's favorite. And then number three is the pick that determines the draft, right? Because
yep.
You got Josh Jackson in Kansas, who's a wing player, athletic, supposed to be really good at defense. The second he steps on an NBA court, struggles with the J, but, you know, freak, he's fast. Jason Tatum, perhaps the best of the guys available that can create their own offense from a big wing type. Malik Monk, who's a shooter. You can put him off the ball and run him through a bunch of screens. Have a Philly roster that, you know, I think has some pieces. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. If Simmons plays that point guard, which is what they're saying, and you have Embiid as the foundation down low, the natural thing is you need to get shooters around them. So that's where Malik Monk would come in. However, if you have the number three pick in the draft, I still think it's that part where you have to pick best player over need. Like, you're still far away from being a championship team.
Yeah, well, not if you ask Joel Embiid, but...
Yeah, he thinks that they're going to beat the Cavaliers next year in the Eastern Conference Finals. No, we did not say that. But if you're drafting at number three, that's an advantage to be able to draft a potential superstar. So pick the guy you think has the best chance to be a potential superstar. And from all indications, it's Josh Jackson. So that's what you do if you can't move up.
I'll say one thing. Never trust Kansas players.
Why?
In the NBA. They've always been bad.
Well,
except Paul Pierce.
Was pretty good.
Okay. Well, current day NBA. Sorry. During my lifetime, I can't name a single good NBA player out of Kansas. Paul Pierce was a little bit before I started watching the NBA.
Oh, Paul Pierce is good. There's a few of them. Andrew Wiggins is out here doing pretty debatable. Well as well. All right, up next, we're going to continue with this draft idea, fixing tanking, ditching the draft. Mike Prater will help us out on Sports Radio The Ticket. Chris Lewis is here. Bob is not. Fish, other side of the glass. And Mike Prater in a chair for this segment. What's going on, Mike?
It's all confusing. Who's going where? Where are we supposed to be?
Who's off first? I don't know.
Exactly.
You have a desk right next to mine. This is great.
That's the weird part. Now, instead of the 8-minute commute where I have to go through five red lights, I get to walk across the hallway and trip over Fish's desk. So it's all good.
It's fun. I sent you this story because I was interested on your opinion of it. This is Kevin Arnovitz, who wrote it back in 2012. ESPN's NBA reporter, about the fact that the NBA draft just isn't necessarily needed at this point. Because you look at all these other walks in life, and, you know, the free labor market tells you that if you're one of the best in your craft coming out of college or really at any point in your life, you have the opportunity to choose your coworkers, choose where you want to work, your locations, and a culture that fits you best. The draft is something that goes against all of that, and it rewards teams that are, look at this point, intentionally trying to lose. Like the Lakers and the Sixers have two of the top three picks. You can't even make the market argument of the smaller markets need the draft to compete because it looks like the bigger markets are the ones who are constantly in the top three of the NBA draft. So when you took a look at this, where did you land?
Well, first of all, this should be a conversation for Caves because he's been pushing this agenda for a long time.
Really?
He likes that open market deal. He doesn't like the fact that a biology or a lawyer or whatever can come out and basically free agent shop around his job anywhere he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And here in the NBA, obviously, or any of the pro sports with the draft, you're kind of locked into this deal. This national residency matching program was a brilliant idea. I didn't know anything about it until you showed that to me today. Where residents, medical graduates, put their names in a database, and it's all based on how much you like the potential place to go have a residency, and mm-hmm. and vice versa, and they match up. You know who goes where is based on matchups. That's brilliant. Unfortunately, I don't think that would work in the NBA. I don't think it would work in the draft.
What would be the consequences of it? Why can't it work?
Right now, and you made a great point in terms of the draft lottery is favoring a lot of these big major cities, and I actually went back and did a little research for you. You're right. I mean, it's loaded. It worked LA, Chicago, Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Minnesota. I mean, we got occasional New Orleans in there.
Cleveland's won it like four times,
yeah.
But they're like the only small market team that seems like it's luck when it comes to the lottery.
I saw that. You know, and Milwaukee had it 1 year and screwed up and picked Andrew Bogut, but we'll let that one fly. Oh,
like I don't see.
I'm afraid if we did that, the bigger cities and the bigger markets and the bigger, more powerful, richer teams would get more. And I'm all about the parity.
Yeah.
Now it's not necessarily working, so that we've got to find a solution. I'm not even sure what that solution is. I wrote down a couple of things that I read about and talked about, and a couple of ideas that I had that I thought were kind of gimmicky, and some of them legit. But it's when Mark Cuban comes out and says we tried everything possible to tank.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible for your sport, even though he's getting no backlash from that. That's terrible for your sport.
You can't have that.
No.
And it comes from a system that rewards you trying to race from the bottom. Thus, it punishes teams who have no chance at a championship, but want to put a competitive product on the floor and maybe chase an eighth spot in the playoffs. Look at the Miami Heat, for example, this year. This was a team that had no business finishing around 500, and they just missed the playoffs, and they're punished for it. They're at the bottom of the lottery, now have, the 13th pick in the draft. If there was a system in place where it could match values and organizational culture and stability, Miami checks all those boxes. So isn't it better to have a system to where players can fit a model that more fits what their personality is than it is this assignment system. And to even clap back at one of the points that you just made with the parity aspect, do you really think the better teams would get more? Like, do you think Markelle Fultz would want to play for the Golden State Warriors if he had the option to play for any team? Because he wouldn't play on the Golden State Warriors. He wouldn't crack their lineup.
Not the lineup that they have now. Absolutely not. But I think they would find a way to make that happen. That's what they do. They would manipulate the system, and the rich would get richer, and the poor would get poorer, I think. And I don't think that would work. I like the idea of – the one idea I saw today that I liked the most What is there, 30 teams in the league, 16 make the playoffs, 14 don't?
Correct.
Give those 14 one ping pong ball. And let's just let those guys, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you have 25% chance or you get 16 ping pong balls or 14 or one. Let's give all 14 of those non-playoff teams an equal chance, an equal chance.
Now, I'll tell you one of the negatives on that and why they won't do it. It makes it more sense for you to miss the playoffs instead of getting the 8 seed. You would never want the 8 seed in that situation. You would try to get the number one pick versus getting walloped by Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs.
So it would just shift the tanking.
Yeah,
is what
exactly.
You're saying.
It would shift it from, all right, if you're on the borderline, why would I want to make the playoffs unless the owner says these two extra home dates are worth more than the first overall pick in the draft, the chance that we have at that. And I don't think that would be the case. I think a lot of teams would say, why would we want to match up with Golden State and get swept in the first round of the playoffs? Let's try to get Markelle Fultz in this draft.
Okay, that's fair. How about we give all 30 teams one ping pong ball? Now, I don't hate your idea. I like your idea, the original idea of matching up. What if there was, you know, 10 players, 15, 20 players that had good matches with their teams? Because we're not going to get 30 for 30.
Yeah.
We're not going to get 30 for 30. So there's seven guys left over with not a match because these guys are just weirdos. Or these franchises are just weirdos. Right. And they're going to live the rest of their lives as single bachelors watching bad TV and
Shout
eating
out
terrible
Sacramento.
Food. Exactly. Like, what's a good matchup for the Sacramento Kings, for crying out loud? So I think that there would be some gray area that they would have to fix there. Let's give all 30 teams one ping pong ball, and let's take the mystery out of it.
But how does that fix the parity issue? If you're all about the draft is needed to encourage parity, having every team have one ping pong ball does nothing for parity. So if you're going to eliminate the need for parity, then why don't you go to a system like this?
Another good point. Another good point. And I guess all these things have probably been debated.
Yeah.
I guess all these things have been debated, and that's why we're stuck with this terrible system. Let me throw out a couple of other ideas.
Go for it.
What if they found a way to – the only part of this I don't like is the tanking. Mm-hmm. I like the lottery show. I think you like the lottery show.
It was entertaining.
It's hype, but it's entertaining.
We got television for an hour.
I watched it the other night. I watched it, and I'm not a big NBA guy like you are, but I watched it and was fairly entertained. The NBA is, what, generating $5, $6, $7 billion a year in revenue. Each team is worth $1.5 billion. The league is healthy. The league is good. But the draft lottery and this whole idea of tanking is bad. What if we waited the last 10 games?
Okay.
I don't know what the formula would be in terms of – you know, just maybe a loss is worth this amount of points and a win is worth this amount of points. And we took those last 10 games. I just want to get rid of the tanking. I'm not so much worried about the lottery or the draft, but the tanking part really, really bothers me. It's to me, it's almost as bad as, you know, when you say gambling and sports, we all go, oh, it's like this big, nasty sin that we're committing. But when we say we're tanking in sports, it's almost like, well, yeah, you're trying to be competitive and make your team better. I get you, coach. I get you, Mark Cuban. I know exactly what you're doing. Let's take the tanking part out of it and maybe wait the last 10 games and give them a certain amount of points if you have a losing record or if you're in it. It'd be kind of a weird formula that you'd have to kind of come up with, but I like that idea as well. Anything to get rid of the tanking.
Yeah, and do you think this is strictly an NBA problem with the tanking thing? Or does the NFL, because it's funny, it's the same structure. In fact, it's more the case in the NFL where it's a direct correlation. If you have the worst record, you get the number one pick. At least in the NBA, if you have the worst record, there's a chance that you won't have the first overall pick. But the NFL never catches any of the heat for what the NBA catches a bunch of heat for.
And the NFL, they don't call it tanking, but they rest players the last 2 weeks of the season. Now, those are usually players, teams trying to get ready for the playoffs and trying to get healthy, and they have different motives. But they're trying to tank games. They're just not calling it tanking games.
Yeah, it's rebuilding. It's resting. Cam Newton did the opposite last year. He should have rested. And they'll play in the last couple of games. And guess what? He needs surgery. So, yeah, I just think something needs to be done.
Do you hate the tanking part? Do you hate the lottery part? Or do you hate the draft part? Or all three of them kind of combined?
The draft part is a fun TV show, but I do think having an NBA free agency, rookie free agency period would be just as fun of a TV show, if not a better one. So I wouldn't miss the draft, and the second half of the draft is unwatchable. Nobody knows who gets picked anyway. They're all foreign guys. So, yeah, I'm not attached to the draft. Yeah, and I hate the I don't like the tanking, although my team, the Philadelphia 76ers, they understand the rules. So I don't mind that they're doing it because the rule structure says it's better for you to lose because that's the best way that you get to be championship caliber team. So what could be done instead? Let's say if you don't have a system that rewards losing, how about you have a system that builds culture? I want the Sixers to have like a unique identity. Like Google has a unique identity in Silicon Valley. Like Uber's different than Google. That's different than Snapchat.
Sure.
All those organizations have their unique culture. So if there's somebody who comes up that would fit the culture that you have, at least you have something unique to offer instead of, you know, we just lost all of our games. Now we're able to get you just because of the fact that we're incompetent.
Sure. The San Antonio Spurs have a culture.
Yeah.
They want a certain player.
Mm-hmm.
And there are players out there that fit that culture. Why would you go out and draft Mike Prater for the San Antonio Spurs when Chris Lewis fits that culture in terms of just kind of a button-down, no-nonsense, no ego, let's just take care of business and go out and play. I like the idea of mixing and matching there. You know, the Celtics have a culture. The Bulls have a culture. The Lakers used to have a culture. I don't know what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
They all do that. I don't hate that idea. A free agent open market. I'd like to see it tried for a while and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it would favor the bigger guys more. They would figure out a way it would come down to a money play. It would really come down to a money play.
Well, if it rewards the bigger markets or whatever market is able to, you know, put their organization in a position where it's attractive to other people, I don't know what's the big problem with that. Tickets are on sale now for the 4th annual Jackson's Country Stomp Friday, August 4th at the Ford Idaho Center Amphitheater. That's starring Jake Owen with special guest Cassidy Pope, Neil McCoy. Get your tickets at any Jackson's food store and receive a $5 discount through Wednesday, May 31st. Well, the qualifying purchase of special Miller Coors and Pepsi products.
Now that we argued over this and didn't come to any solutions, does Fish have a solution? Does the young kid in the room have any kind of bright ideas?
We'll continue with this next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Mike Prater is hanging out with us for a little bit. This is Idaho Sports Talk with no Bob Beeler. Chris Lewis here. Got Michael Fisher here as well. 208-424-9300 is the number to get in touch with the show. We've been talking about the NBA draft and why I don't really think the draft is needed at this point. You think about all the other areas of the free labor market. When you're an attractive prospect, you get to pick your environment, pick your work environment. And do we exactly have parity right now? And would a system in place where you have a draft free agency or perhaps a residency type program, would that completely destroy parity? I don't quite think so, but you guys have a couple of takes on this. So again, 208-424-9300, Chris Lewis, Mike Prater, and Dan, you're on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well.
I've always had trouble taking the NBA draft seriously because it seems like every year, you know, the first team makes their choice, and then 2 minutes later, they've traded the rights to that player to another team, and the second team makes their choice, and 2 minutes later, they've traded the rights to that player to another team. You know, so apparently there's a lot of behind-the-scenes deals. You take this player, we'll do this, we'll do that. I was wondering if you could discuss that, and I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Dan. And that's the thing, especially once you get beyond like the first 15 picks of the draft, very often teams don't even want to pick anymore. So they just literally either sell their pick to another team for cash considerations, or they do the Euro stash where they draft a player who they know won't be on their team, thus isn't on their roster or salary cap for a couple of seasons. But that's not immune. Like, there's a lot of moves made in the NFL draft as well, but that just goes to show you that not everybody is intrigued. I would make the case that not a lot of people are intrigued by the draft beyond the lottery. So if you got rid of the NBA draft television show and instead replaced it with a free agent period of about a week where you have all these, where's Lonzo Ball going? Did you hear his meeting with the Lakers didn't go that well? Markelle Fultz just turned down the Celtics. Like, you could have some fun storylines that create good TV and radio debates having a draft.
That would be phenomenal. It'd almost be like, remember DeAndre Jordan, the old thing from his chair behind the door.
Yep.
All that drama. Let's multiply that that thing by 30 and see what happens. There's no doubt that that would make for better TV. I don't mind the drafts. I don't mind the trades. You know, it makes for an awkward few moments on the draft lottery show, you know, when Joel Embiid and a lot of other people are like, I'm confused. I don't even know what's going on here. What's the rules? What's going on? I can't figure it out. I don't know if that's good entertainment, awkward entertainment, or just we don't want to deal with that kind of stuff. But I'm not too worried about, you know, just a couple of awkward moments on a TV show. I'm starting to really kind of dig your free agent open market, especially if we gave it like a 2-week period during the slow time of the year.
Yeah.
It would be completely crazy.
Because we're talking about 19 and 20 year olds. 19 and 20 year olds can't make up their mind of what they want for dinner at the campus food court. Imagine them trying to decide where they're going to spend the next 4 years of their life. That'd be a circus. That would be so fun to cover.
But they've already had practice going to college, figure, because that's kind of the same deal. It's kind of an open free agent market. And everybody's shopping around for each other. That seems to work at the college basketball and the college football level, so no issues there. You're talking me into it, Lewis. I don't know. I don't know if I'm
leaning you there.
I don't know if I like it, but it would be great entertainment. It would certainly create a lot of buzz. How many people? We just got a phone call, but that might be the only guy other than you and a few other people that are hardcores that really kind of follow the X's and O's of the NBA during you know, not the games themselves, but the business of the game, of the league behind it. That would explode it. Now, at the same time, you wouldn't want to do it during the playoffs, because if you're going to do this, you got to do it when you get maximum exposure. They're going to go for another month, right?
True. Yep.
You would have to do it. I mean, the draft right now is in June.
June 22nd.
So you would like take the last 10 days of June and just open it up as a free agent market?
Mm-hmm. July 1st, when the NBA's free agency begins for the veteran players, I mean, that whole week turns into kind of a
chaos.
You know, you mentioned the DeAndre Jordan chair thing. So you already have that week in the calendar where you kind of own it. So you can make it a later June or after that date in July and still have fun with it. So
here's 10 days for the new guys, and here's 10 days for the old guys, and let's get after it.
Let's make it work. We have another call, 208-424-9300. Skyler wants to talk about the free agency versus the draft concept for incoming players. Skyler. Are you there?
I am. Yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I like the idea. Simply because the Lonzo Balls of the world would be coming out of the woodwork. And while it certainly does make for good talk show fodder, I think the more we have people like that, especially people who get revered and who get just constant screen time and paid millions of dollars to have that type of approach to life in general, the more that the average 16-year-old at, you know, Centennial High School is going to be that way. And I don't see that as a positive. You mentioned something that I thought was very interesting, and that was a residency program, which would somewhat kill the college piece of it. It would be more like, European soccer, than it would, the current college process, which I love college sports, so I hate that. But at the same time, I think that's very, very intriguing. One thing I hate about fantasy sports is that it has killed, at least to some extent, the ability to really be a fan of a team, because you end up rooting for these individuals and various teams. I feel like there'd be so much turnover. Why hold on to a veteran who might be tanking at the end of his career and you're going to have to pay more money to, when I'm not beholden to the luck of the draft? I can go out and I know I can find a kid that I like, I can pay very little money for. I feel like you're going to have way more turnover across teams. And once again, your club, your team, it doesn't really have much of a face anymore, because it's even more rotational and in flux than it is right now, because you're not betting on an unknown. You're betting on something that you can really look at stats and say, I know we can get our kind of guy, and let's go that route. And I like the veterans. I like teams that I can root for a couple of years and whatnot. Maybe I'm old school.
Skyler, we appreciate the call. And that was an externality that I really wasn't considering, and the fact that, you know, teams would probably be more willing to move on from veterans that have been a part of their team, knowing that there is a chance that they could get the top guy in a draft class to replace that aging veteran, even on teams that aren't bad, on teams that are pretty good. I haven't really thought about that one.
You like that? I mean, how would that affect the league, you think?
Like, let's say, like, Paul Pierce around the end of his time with the Boston Celtics initially, and if they had a chance where there was another wing player, a la Josh Jackson, just to compare Kentucky guys together, where Josh Jackson kind of plays the same position as Paul Pierce, and if the Celtics said, you know what, we have a chance to get this guy because our culture matches what he wants, and he's let us know that he would be interested in playing for us. But if Paul Pierce was on the roster, there's no time for him to actually play. I do think that you would have teams more willing to move on.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, this isn't the NFL. The NFL, you can just cut players and either eat money or, you know, some cap penalties that go against you. But in the NBA, the contracts are guaranteed.
Yeah.
So it's a lot harder to just move up from under somebody who you do have under contract for a few years.
I would agree with that. And I don't know if that luxury tax or salary, that doesn't come into play if he's on your roster, right?
Correct. You can go over the salary cap for a guy on your roster, but you still have to pay the luxury tax if you go over the luxury tax amount.
But you can't do that to bring a new guy on your roster.
You can't do that to bring in new guys.
Gotcha.
So that's how that system works.
I never thought of the veteran angle. That's an interesting angle as well.
Mm-hmm. 208-424-9300. That's the number on the Commercial Tire text line. Right now, be the ninth caller, and you can qualify to win a pair of Boise State football season tickets by playing Touchdown for Tickets. These tickets are in Section 132, Row K, $580 value, South End Zone Second Deck. It's sponsored by the Bronco Athletic Association. Again, tickets worth $580 for the pair. 208-424-9300. Right now, play Touchdowns for Tickets next. Mike Prater, appreciate the time.
Thanks,
more
Chris.
Of Sports Radio The Ticket next. It's time for another Touchdown for Tickets. Terry will have a chance to qualify to win a pair of Boise State season tickets. Terry, what's going on, Terry?
Same old.
Same old. Gotcha. All right, how many games were you able to get to last year?
Pardon?
How many games were you able to get to last season?
No, I didn't make any games last year.
No games. So you're looking at...
I've been a fan since 1970.
Woo! So you've seen quite a bit, but you're still going to get up to any games last year. So do you know the home schedule? Is there an opponent this year that Boise State faces that you're looking forward to seeing?
I'm sorry, my cell phone's... cutting out.
All right, then we'll just get right to the play then. Hopefully it doesn't cut out during the play, because that would be unfortunate. All right, Michael Fisher, play the play, and you'll let me know, Terry, whether this is a touchdown or not.
Ripping in the shotgun, faces a four-man rush, throwing it long down the middle. He's got McNichols. He caught it at the 45 of BYU.
Caught it at the 45 of BYU. Bob's voice was getting excited, but Terry, is this a touchdown?
I think it's not a touchdown.
All right, he says no.
Ripping in the shotgun, faces a four-man rush, throwing it long down the middle. He's got McNichols. He caught it at the 45 of BYU and is going to toast them into the end zone, scoring in the far corner, and Boise State is on the board. 76 yards on the pass, down the middle to Jeremy McNichols from Brett Ripon.
Ooh. That one hurts, Terry. Got into the end zone. I remember that play against BYU. A big play in that game.
Yeah.
Big play. But unfortunately, Terry, you're not qualified for the pair of Boise State football season tickets.
Thanks anyway.
But, of course, be listening next hour. It's another chance for you to qualify and win. And then listen every day this week. Also next week, 5:30. With Caves and Prater to see if you've won. Get your season tickets now. Gives you the best pricing per game, the best seats, and opportunities to purchase additional home games, road games, bowl game tickets. Touchdown for Tickets on your FM home for Boise State Football, Sports Radio 93.1 The Ticket.
And we'll start the sports update with some sad news today. Wayne Walker went to the University of Idaho. Number retired up there. Played 15 years in the NFL. He passed away today at the age of 80. Thoughts and prayers are with the Walker family. Unfortunately, Wayne Walker, former University of Idaho Vandal, Detroit Lion in the NFL, passed away today at the age of 80.
Friend of the show as well. So, prayers up to the family.
And we'll go now to the NBA. Kawhi Leonard ruled questionable for Saturday's Game 3 against Golden State. Leonard did not practice yesterday. He did attend, worked on his shooting, Greg Popovich said that the long-term health of Kawhi is always a factor in making the decision, and since Kawhi got hurt in Game 1 in the third quarter, the Spurs have been outscored by over 50 points and are now down in the series 2-0.
Now, you have to also keep in mind, Greg Popovich with the Spurs once basically sat Tim Duncan down for a playoff series with the same mentality of long-term health more important than short-term gain. And you'd have to say it worked, right? This was back in like 2000, like one or two or three around that time where, you know, Tim Duncan early in his career and, you know, certainly a team that could have won a championship that year, really any of those years, they had championship level teams, but they decided not to push it. They ended up getting a pretty lengthy career out of Tim Duncan.
There's a coach I trust to manage an injury. It's going to be Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
He's going to know either way if I should start him, if I should sit him. He may have started to determine this series is over.
And it goes back to one of the things we've been harping on throughout the show, and it's organizational stability and how that can be attractive to incoming players, whether it's vet free agents or whether it would be incoming rookies if you wanted to tweak the current draft setup. And is there an organization in the NBA that has more stability than the Spurs? The answer is probably no. So when you have the stability, and Greg Popovich knows he isn't coaching for his job in a year, you can afford to be like, all right, I know this year, while we have a good chance we're in the Western Conference Finals, I know I'll be here for a good amount of, you know, 3-4 more years if I want to, and we'll have a chance to win in 3 or 4 more years, so why push it this season?
No, that's unless he drives LaMarcus Aldridge out with his comments, but he's Popovich. We can trust him. Now, speaking of rookies, Chris Lewis, your favorite rookie in the South Atlantic League, Tim Tebow, not only has he been destroying the pitching down there, he also destroyed an area usually reserved for Draymond Green. As according to the New York Post, Doug Burstman took his 13-year-old daughter to see a game of Tebow's. It's his daughter's idol. The two were down watching Tebow warm up on the field, throw some balls back and forth, and Burstman broke the golden rule of baseball. If you're down near the field of play, keep your eyes on the ball at all time. Burstman did not do that. And an errant throw of Tebow's sailed past his throwing mate and right into the area where Draymond Green usually reserves for his foot and the opposing player.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know the area you're talking
about. Yeah, where Draymond Green's foot likes to go during NBA games. That's where that ball went. No pun intended. Burstman said Tim Tebow came over after they were done throwing, signed it baseball form after the incident. Maybe there was some intent there. Burstman is a University of Tennessee alum and was wearing his Volunteers hat when he was hit.
Tebow beats the Vols again. Able to get another victory over Tennessee. The Tebow story is, I hope he writes a book, right? He's going to write a book.
He's going to write a book, and we're all going to buy it.
Because he probably has stories. I hope my man Kevin Fitzgerald writes the book.
Does he have stories, though? I mean, he's kind of boring. He's, you know, a very religious guy. He goes on tours, builds churches in third world countries. But, I mean, he's never going to go out clubbing like Johnny. I'd rather read a Johnny Manziel book than a Tim Tebow book because there's going to be better stories.
I can see your point.
Yeah. Now, speaking of storylines, Bradley Beal may have finally figured out why the Cleveland Cavaliers somehow struggled down the stretch in the regular season, going 10-14, only to turn it around and go 9-0 to start the postseason. That's because Beal says he has a theory. He said, quote, "Cleveland didn't want to see us," meaning the Washington Wizards. "I always said that. I felt like there's a reason they didn't want to play us in the second round. They're going to go down. They're going to go down in the conference finals. The Cavs did not want to go down in the second round." That's what Beal told Sportsnet Central.
You've seen the Cavs play this postseason. I've seen the Cavs play this postseason. I don't think anything about their demeanor says they were fearing any team.
The Wizards did take them to the brink a couple times, including, you know, it needed LeBron to do a crazy circus.
Yeah, that was the day after the Super Bowl.
360 turnaround, three-point fadeaway.
Yeah, that was a crazy game. That was one of the best games of the NBA season. Who won that game?
The Cavs.
There you go. The Cavs were at a different level in the playoffs. We knew what they were doing. They were just trying to make their roster in an optimal position to make a run in the postseason, and they've done just that. I think teams were more likely avoiding the Cleveland Cavaliers than the Cavaliers were avoiding other teams.
So you're not buying Bradley Beal's theory?
I am not.
Would the Wizards put up more of a fight than the Celtics have?
I said that on this show. Yeah, I thought the Wizards
So you're at least saying
position.
Beal kind of knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I just think that the Celtics don't have enough top-end talent.
Yeah.
Like, the Wizards have Wall, have Beal. You know, Otto Porter is a decent player. They have a couple of guys they try to throw at LeBron. I don't think they would have won the series, but, you know, you might have seen great athletes perform at high levels. And at this point, besides LeBron, are we having to see Kyrie Irving have a spectacular game? Yeah. Are we going to have to see Kevin Love have to score 25 points? I don't know if they're going to be tested in the same way that they would have if the Wizards was the matchup. But the Wizards, I mean, they had their chances. They were more than capable of beating the Celtics. They were more inconsistent with their play.
You got to win a road game.
Yeah, fourth quarter of game seven was a disaster for them offensively. So, I mean, I don't feel bad. Like, they should have, if they wanted their matchup against the Cavs, take care of business against the Celtics team. I think they're more talented than.
Maybe Bradley Beal's also buying into what Isaiah Thomas said. Isaiah Thomas in his Celtics game two tonight. And talking about the Cavaliers, said he isn't scared. This isn't Space Jam. They're not the Monstars. Do you really think we would? Do you ever thought in 2017 we'd hear someone talk about the Monstars again, Chris Lewis?
Yes, because Space Jam is one of those movies that never goes away. We'll have a story.
Are the Cavaliers? Who's closer to the Monstars, Cavaliers or Warriors?
I would say that the Warriors are closer to the Monstars because everybody on that team is
and it's
ridiculous.
Basically LeBron versus them.
If I had to say, the Cavs are closer to the Toon Squad. I mean,
because
it's LeBron
and a bunch of characters,
and a bunch of other guys. You know, they have Bill Murray. He can kind of be like, you know, Kevin Love. Who else is on that team?
Bugs
Who's
Bunny.
The big dude from Seinfeld? What's his name? You know what I'm talking about? That big, large dude from Seinfeld?
No, I never watched that show.
I don't really rock with Seinfeld either. I just know this guy's
before
in
my
it.
Time.
I just annoyed like 90% of our audience, though, by just saying I don't rock with Seinfeld.
It was before our time.
Yeah, I mean, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is before my time, too. And
I thought more who it says Kevin Love. He's more like Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck.
I was going to go with real people, but yeah, I think he's closer to Bugs Bunny. He's got big ears.
Well, sticking in the NBA, Paul George missed out on the All-NBA team. He will not be eligible for the Superstar Mega Max extension that they're calling it now, I believe. That Indiana could have offered him to make him the highest-paid player in the league. And the Pacers did not trade him at the latest trade deadline, as we all remember. And maybe they should have. According to ESPN, one of the deals they were offered was from the Atlanta Hawks, who offered four first-round picks for Paul George. Four of them. I would assume that would be this year's, next year's, next year's, next year's, and then 2020.
Yes, I don't think they have anybody else's first-round picks, but I could be wrong about that.
Or who knows at this point in the NBA?
Yeah, draft picks get flipped around quite a bit.
Well, let's just assume it's Atlanta's next four draft picks.
Do you think there were unprotected picks? Want to assume for the discussion?
Yeah, I would assume they're unprotected.
So you just get their picks regardless of where they finish. They could be in the top three and it still go to the Pacers. Now, you got to actually think this out. If the Hawks had Paul George, they'd actually
be pretty
good.
It's a 25-plus pick this year, I would assume.
Yeah.
25-plus the next year when Paul George is still there. And then after that, that could be a top three pick. Top five pick. The Hawks, I mean, they do find a way to win with nothing
That's
on their
the thing.
Roster.
Like they have a good culture there.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking a lot about culture and how it impacts and guys fit into a certain... Like, there is a certain profile of a player that fits in very well there. Their scouting department can find without having a top pick. Now, their ceiling's limited because of it. Like, you'll never think that they have a good enough team to win the Eastern Conference, but, you know, they have, unless you bring in somebody like Paul George, but to do that, you have to offer something like four first-round picks to do it, which is a hefty price.
True, and we'll end the sports update by saying, if you're listening, maybe you know someone in high school, you're still in high school trying to get out of your final exam, all you need to do, tweet at a famous athlete. Kobe Bryant started that yesterday. A high schooler, William Pate, took to Twitter saying his teacher had agreed that if Kobe retweeted the tweet, class would dodge the final. Bryant responded by saying, "Hope you have an A in the class." Final canceled. Didn't end there, though. Aaron Rodgers, the very next day, someone from Iowa tweeted out, said, "Rodgers, our teacher's a huge fan of yours. If you retweet this, she's agreed to cancel the final exam." Boom. Done. Aaron Rodgers said, "I know the final is probably important, but hope this helps." So there you go, Chris Lewis. All you need to do, if you want your final canceled, reach out to a famous athlete. Unfortunately, Boise State classes are already over. That won't help our Bronco alumni over there. They have already had to take all their tests.
And now if they actually spent all the time trying to get that professional athlete to tweet back at them or retweet and instead studied for the test.
How long does it take to send out one tweet?
Now, how many people in this class needed that final to get themselves from that borderline B to an A?
I'd be pretty upset. Yeah,
like, if I was on that B borderline and was trying to strive for that all A's, and then I got to miss out on the final that I studied for, that I was going to get a 95, and I was going to vault my average to an A, I'm mad. Like, I'm trying to beat up.
Well,
Kobe
maybe
Bryant.
You know, some teachers they might be say, "Oh, you know, we'll give you the option to take the final. I would assume that maybe they made the final optional.
Now, if the teachers just said everybody gets an A,
now we're on board.
Now that's what's
now. Up. I will say, I will take some issue up with the high schooler in Iowa who tweeted at Aaron Rodgers. His class was a sports literature class in high school.
A sports lit class in high school.
Kill for that in high school.
That's the business right there.
If I was like, you got to take an English final or a sports lit final? Sports lit, give it to me every time.
Now, what is a sports lit? Like, what do you do in that class? I've never even heard of a sports lit class.
I would assume you read about sports, which is very difficult.
Like, what's the textbook? You have to read, like, John Feinstein?
You have to read 538, Grantland.
Oh, okay. Now we're getting advanced analytics. Grantland, yeah. It's too bad. Grantland don't exist no more.
The Undefeated, maybe.
Okay.
For the storylines. Very difficult, I'm sure.
Probably tough. How about Idaho Sports Talk 3-6, Gibbs and Brander on location. Tuesday at the tailgate. Wednesday at the Select-A-Seat football season ticket event at Boise State. Thursday at Chandler's for their 10th anniversary. So they busy. If you are in the area, stop by for a drink, better Boise State football season ticket, or a prime grade steak. That sounds like a great week for them. Up next, it's Quick Picks. Me versus Fist for a couple of days. I'm going to knock
going
you down,
down
next on the ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I get him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some Quick Picks and Predictions with Bob and Chris.
And Quick Picks and Predictions is sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lane in Garden City. Bob has retired from Quick Picks after he won. He wants to leave on a high note. I'm just
kidding. Retired. He's not here anymore.
Yeah. No, he will be back. But it's me versus Chris. I feel like I have the advantage. If I come up with these, I could game these to my advantage.
You can. We're only going to do this head-to-head for a couple of days, So you need to get off to a good start before Bob gets back and starts losing to me
easy.
Again.
It'd be a clean sweep. But we'll start with game one, Chris Lewis. You could start. You've done this before. Game two winner, Celtics, Cavaliers. Who you got?
Come on, man. Cavs. That's a layup. You're trying to set it up so you go like a perfect 8-0.
No. This is the game everyone's saying if the Celtics don't win this game, it's a sweep. So this is the game that everyone's giving the Celtics the best chance for.
Scott Foster or Monty McCutcheon or whoever the official is for this game.
Hey, man.
The NBA is going to put the one who can set Isaiah Thomas to the free throw line a gajillion times. So they'll do all they can.
Well, J.R. Smith said dirty play. Are you expected dirty play tonight, Chris Lewis?
I don't expect a dirty play. I expect a lot of free throws, though.
You know what? I think I'm going to take the Celtics here, Chris Lewis, simply because this is their game to win. If they lose this game, you're going to get swept as the number one seed. I think the NBA may do it a little assist here or there. LeBron may be the only guy for the Cavs who goes to the free throw line since he's shooting the worst free throw percentage of his career. I think the Celtics win and their only win of the series. Go to pick number two. Golden State versus San Antonio is tomorrow. Kawhi Leonard is questionable. Last time we did higher total winning margin or Klay Thompson points. We're going to change it up today, Chris Lewis. Higher total, Kawhi Leonard minutes in game three, or Golden State winning margin. I'm going to go with Golden State winning margin because I think if Kawhi Leonard plays, which I think he will, the Spurs have a chance to win, which would mean their winning margin would not exist. So I'm going to go with Kawhi Leonard minutes. Higher total, I think this is the one game he plays. If he gets hurt or if they lose, he won't even play in game four. So, Chris Lewis, what do you got?
All right, what if this is this void if the Spurs win but Kawhi doesn't play?
If somehow by a miracle that happens, we'll avoid this. I don't see that happening after game two.
All right, that's one scenario that's impossible. That is possible, but you got to have a winner there. I'm going to go on the other side of you again. I'm going to say Golden State wins and Kawhi doesn't play.
Now, I'm sure a mathematician could chime in. Technically, Kawhi's minutes of zero would be a higher total than the -5 winning margin.
You're right.
Technically.
Good call. Is it a mathematician? Did a mathematician text in?
No, someone texted in. I just figured it was a mathematician.
Okay, gotcha.
Pick number three, Chris Lewis. This is the Fish and Chris special. Phillies and Marlins play all three games this weekend. The Phillies are playing at Pittsburgh. Marlins are playing at the Dodgers, so you guys get a little bit of more of a head start. But, Chris Lewis, more wins Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Phillies or the Marlins?
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks.
They both lost four in a row.
Those fighting Phils are not putting much of a fight to the teams that they're facing. They just got beat down by Texas, 14-24 this year. But the only team that's worse in that division is the Marlins, 14-26. So with that in mind, y'all have a negative 40 run differential. My God.
Yeah, it's going to get worse by the day.
Oh, my God. But that's not even the worst in baseball. The Royals are minus 42. The A's are minus 40.
Giants are negative 61, actually.
The Padres are minus 72.
Whoa. Bob's Giants, minus 61. We're still ahead of them.
You got some crazy negative run differentials right now. I'm going with my Phillies.
How many games do you think they're going to win this weekend?
Three. Okay. Sweep.
Well, Chris Lewis, I'm going to have to go with the Phillies because I think the Marlins can only win one game, if that, against the Dodgers. You guys get the last place Pirates.
You're going against
I'm
team.
Going against my squad Wait for the sake of the game because I don't think the Marlins stand a chance.
So much for you being a diehard.
And we'll end three NHL games this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Chris Lewis, will the home team win exactly two of the three NHL games? They're at Ottawa Friday, at Anaheim Saturday, at Pittsburgh Sunday.
No. I'm going no. They will not win exactly two. In fact, I think road teams, especially when you get to this part of the series, definitely the better teams are playing on the road. I think the road teams, especially in the NHL playoffs, they get it done. Even the Predators lost a home game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Ottawa and Pittsburgh are going to go 1-1 on the road. I think the Predators will win in Anaheim, so I will also go no.
Yeah, there you go. Idaho Sports Talk next week will be on location three different times, but no Caves today for IST. So Dave Harbison, the DH, and Mike Prater, who we thank for joining us earlier today. We return Monday. Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.